Hi.
Welcome to the Angle Podcast. If you're new around here, this is where we look into African perspectives on the digital culture, media, money, digital governance, and the creative industry. As always, I'm riding with the Silver Fox of the show.
What's up?
Scotty Yo. Stopping by for a nice chat today. I see she got the memo all checked out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Amen. Abusoa. Welcome.
Hi. Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. Could be better.
Ah.
At least the robots are working.
They are?
Yeah.
We guarantee you'll feel amazing after the session on the podcast.
I promise you.
That's lovely. That's
this
lovely.
Will be refreshing.
I love it. Yeah? I love it for me.
I'm going to dive right in because it's the sort of indie game dev scene. I quite like. I move around in the circles quite a lot, and I try and chat to as many people as possible. When Stan suggested you as a guest on the show, I was like, yes, because I heard we've just discovered mistakenly. I heard that your little your game development studio there at the Itzmohlong precinct in Bromfontein had been shut down, but apparently that is not true. So yeah, maybe just tell us a little bit about that. Not necessarily being shut down or not, but what you do at the lab there at the precinct.
My name is Avuzo Njongwana. I'm a game dev. Work for Fagukesi and Itzmohlong. I dabble in a lot of things. And yeah, clarification out of the air, the game hub is not closed down. the cohort that was in last year had finished. Okay. So now we are recruiting for a new cohort, which should start in April.
Nice.
I think I'll just start with how I'm involved in the game studio.
Right.
So I was a cohort. I was part of the first incubatees. In 2021 or 2022, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's when my studio, South Game Studio, was born. And then luckily, because of the gaming industry in South Africa or Africa, we are still quite slow. It's very hard to make money. I then kind of studied project management. I studied project management at Bits Business School, and then there was a position open at Itzmohlong, and I applied for the position and now I work there. So apart from me managing other projects at Itzmohlong, I also quite go into the gaming whenever they need my assistance, but I'm not technically there. There's a game manager that runs the studio.
Okay.
I'm not the game manager, but I mean, I'm there. If they need my help, I'm always there to help. If they need me to do masterclasses, I'm there to assist with masterclasses. If some of the guys need me to assist with the code, I'm there to assist them with code and direct them. I guess I give them first dips of the industry, collaboration, how that is very important in gaming scene. I think that's as far as, I guess, Itzmohlong and me and the game studio.
What would you say is the intention of the cohort? Is there a product intention at the end of the year, or is it just a skills development cohort, or how does it work?
So the main goal for the incubation is to take your prototype. So this is how it goes. We get our cohorts from the game jam that we host at Fagukesi Festival every year. So the winning teams there, we then get to assess them. They go through a pre-assessment because they need to be there full time. One could say it's a seed funding into your studio growing afterwards. So whatever prototype that you might have built at the Fagukesi jam, or even if you might have another game, doesn't necessarily have to be the prototype. We give you a year or 9 months. Is it 9 months? 9 months to continue your prototype. What we try to do is look into the business side of gaming in preparation of after the incubation. So finishing your prototype, making sure you've got a great pitch, making sure that you understand the business side of gaming, but also making sure that there's a balance between the business side of gaming and your mechanics, your playable mechanics, because that's what's interesting. That's what, you know, drives people. We don't want you to have a prototype and then at the end of the incubation people just don't like it. So there's market access. We push for our incubatees to go to you know, markets where they can get their games tested and come back and review it and refine those, you know, I guess corrections that they would have gotten from the crowd. And then at the end of the year, if there are opportunities, because every year is different with the creative industries. Like last year, personally, from where I was running a game studio, there was no money in the gaming, in the creative industry. Like, you look for funding, like they just, I think it was because of the voting in South Africa. So each year is quite different. But when we do, for instance, one of the game studio, we're able to bring them in and they were able to get the opportunity to continue making a game with one of the guys that we were, one of the French partners that we are with. So it's more to take you from a student side of things, because most of the incubators are from Vets Business, Vets Digital Arts. So it's more of to move them from that to, you know, game studio owners and creating that, in I guess, entrepreneurship for them to be able to collaborate and create jobs.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay.
I mean, unfortunately, there's no predictor as to a game success in the market, so it's a tough one. So when you mention about taking it to the market, testing it, come back and fixing it, I consider that quite important. Yeah, it's kind of like that. You know, you've got there's a lot of guys that are developing games that there's different kind of creatives, right? You get the kind of creative that wants to sit and make something on their own and then kind of like release it into the world when it's done.
Yeah,
which the success of that is very rare. Extremely rare. Then there's the guys that understand that they kind of, they're less precious about being associated with an unfinished project or something. You know, there's different mechanics they want to push out into the public whereby they're okay to get feedback from the larger community and people say, oh, it's crap, this and that, they can take it, you know.
Yeah.
But you'd rather know that before you spend more time on the project.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose you guys kind of work in that space a little more than, you know, the lone artist that has this magical thing they just release into the world. I fall into that category sometimes. Like I like releasing things into the world, and I realize in my old age I've realized it's actually better to like just have a consistent simmering burn on what you're doing as opposed to like.
So the hub gives you that opportunity, like to test your prototype.
Yeah, we give
them come back and reiterate.
Yeah, Comic-Con, we go hard. Range, we go hard. There's another one now. It's called Afrogeek. It's Soweto, we go hard. We host, I'm not part of that, but we, Gute, host game dev meetups every month. We go hard there. There's always playtests. So anywhere in any market that speaks to gaming, even in some of the film festivals, we go hard. We open up, we try and open it up and make sure that people are testing. I think our biggest lesson at South Game Studio was exactly that. Like we were creating this game that was African, you know, story and this and that. And then it was great. You know, the prototype was amazing. But then, you know, when we took it out, the reviews were like,
it's not the one.
Yeah, after so much time and people were just like, you could have added this, you could have done that. And now we were done and at the incubation. And, you know, this gaming stuff are quite expensive.
Right.
So you don't have the same, I guess, opportunity anymore. Mm. Even though we are quite open. One thing I love about Simulukong has, it's quite open to its alumni. If you needed to finish a certain game or something, you can always come back and talk to us. We're never going to shut you away and say, nah, because you're done, you can't, you know.
Yeah.
So you can still use the equipment if you, it's really like a pressure, you know, we've got a project, there's got this investor and whatever. And so I think that there's growth.
Interesting. So my background is mobile app dev and UX, UI, I'm sure you know this bit. So we have a process when we design our products there to create a prototype, which is a clickable product
yeah.
off of XD or Figma.
Yeah.
And we can test that, right? Mm-hmm. We can take it to the to its intended users and go, hey, what do you think? And get real feedback and then go and tweak.
Yeah.
At what point in game dev are you afforded that opportunity?
I think it's there, but we don't. I don't think I've ever really found like a software. I know with this with Android, I used to create a lot of Android apps where it's just click, click, click to see if this works for you or not. Yeah. But for gaming, fam, like if you're just gonna have to sit down and do it.
Wow.
I haven't found. And if there is someone somewhere, please let us know.
Wait, you have to build it?
Yeah, you have to build it. But there's many ways in which you can, right? What I love is that if you are really into the gaming community, there's already scripts that are there, out there.
Right.
And if you understand what you're doing, it's quite easy to drag and drop.
Right,
for instance, Unity has designed this amazing... Am I allowed to mention it? Unity has designed this amazing third-person shooter script with a robot. So all you have to do is download and then put the thing in your world and then, you know, move a few things and da-da-da.
Make it look pretty.
Yeah, and then voila, it works. And then if you want to change your character, you just move the skeleton of the robot and replace it with the skeleton of your character. And then Bob is your builder, if they say. And then great. And then you move on. And you have assets that you can download in Unity Store or any other place that sells gaming assets, whether it's for 2D or 3D, that you can just drag and drop. You download, most of them are free, download, drag and drop. And then that's how you then can quickly, you know,
Create something to test.
Yeah. And then we call them placeholders, and then you put them there, and then those are most of the assets that we use when in a game jam. And then the biggest problem with game development is that now there's five of you that are working in the game.
Mm.
If you are doing the UI, someone else is doing the game world. Some of it's just like doing sound, and the other one is doing programming. Maybe you've got two programmers. The biggest thing that I've come to see is how you put all of these things, they become seamless,
Put them together?
Though you might be using GitHub, trust me.
It's never easy. Transition.
Yeah, it's never really easy. And that's where your production time takes long.
Ah.
It takes quite long, especially like if you're going to have different animations and da-da-da-da, it becomes quite a huge thing. But it's doable. It's doable. Sure. So that's our click and
check. Okay, so there's no real way of testing if the idea for a game will work until you fully develop it and you put it out there.
I mean, you could do a board game.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's no avoiding the hard work, unfortunately, Stan. You keep trying, but...
I'm telling you. I'm trying to cut corners here.
Fam, you can. I'm sure if you've been in the industry quite a while, I'm sure there's ways you can cut corners.
No, I'm just thinking in terms of cost, because I can imagine, it's quite expensive, right?
Yeah, and it is.
It must be demoralizing for you to spend like a whole year or two developing this game, resources behind this game, and after 2 years you realize, oops, it's not working.
That's why you have to take out your game as soon as possible. No matter how ugly it is, no matter how unstable it is, no matter how, just take it out.
Yeah.
Take it out on each IO, tell your community to go and play, take it out wherever on Steam, take it out, take it out.
As early as possible.
As early as possible, take out your game and then have people see. And then that way, I promise you, your chances of success are a little bit more higher than if you'd been sitting with a prototype for 6 months doing something that you know.
You're at least managing your success a bit better. You're kind of like, you've seen what needs to, you're on the path. You can kind of see the road a little bit further ahead
And people love easy games.
Huh?
They love easy games. I don't want to think if I'm going to play a game. That's the type of game I'm playing. Yeah. So don't make something complicated unless you're doing it for a certain target market.
Oh.
But like if you really are making like casual games,
yeah,
I don't want to think. Make a game so I can click and drop and you know, I see the kids, the games my sister's kids play.
Yeah,
it's like dinosaurs games. Just eating pineapples, whatever, and they just move to the next world. It's like, oh, okay.
That's it.
And they enjoy it, and they sit through the adverts, which is where you make your money as a game dev, right? They sit through the adverts because it's a dinosaur. It's different. It's like a Megasaurus jumping, doing stuff, and it's like a T-Rex. And that's it. As long as you sound and, you know, I guess your graphics sometimes graphics don't even matter. Like, it's like,
it just has to be engaging.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, so I have a question. I spoke to, I'm just not sure, some people consider it contentious. I don't. I think it's just
contentious.
I just considered a conversation point. So I did I was writing a feature end of last year. Mm-hmm. I was went down to Africa Game Dev
Africa Games Week.
Games Week.
Yeah.
And I like going there simply because I can meet people in person that are from other parts of the continent, making all kinds of cool IP. And the story I was writing, just like, you know, the challenges of being a game studio in Africa. You know, of course they all have similar stories in terms of access to funding. Which wasn't the interesting part. The interesting part for me was, you know, the tone of the game that you're making, or the context of the game you're making, the story of the game you're making.
Yeah.
And there was always like this middle ground I heard from many producers, in the sense of like, okay, they want to find a space whereby they're being what you could consider authentically African, in the sense of like, you know, there's almost like cliche type perspectives on terms of what that is, because they're trying to appeal to a larger audience, while at the same time find the middle ground between appealing to that audience while being trying to be authentic to some extent, without being an idiot to your own culture. And the way you can do that is you drill down, so you get to a particular, very particular cultural reference, and then you can kind of be authentic. But whenever someone tries to be sort of African authentic, what does that even mean? Like, that doesn't exist, right? So what's your, when you guys are making games, or you're talking about making games and taking to a larger market, how do you kind of navigate that? Because, like, everyone has like a different answer to it. Because it's like, making a game from Africa. It's like, why is that even a thing? Because you're competing with a global market anyway. It's like you're competing with everyone's games. Right. So it's like, is there, you know, and I've got some examples I can point out to you, but I mean, like, how do you guys talk about that in your labs?
This is a topic.
Exactly.
And I could imagine it's quite a nice one for her, because the game that you were talking about was themed around African culture, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So being African, I feel like Africans have a lot to say. And I was also stuck in that for a very long time, to a point where when we started doing research on our game, it got me so emotional because I kept finding out information about my African culture. I was like, oh, why is this not there? I'm like, why are people not finding out about such things? And it's unfortunate because I feel like youth feels they have a burden to tell the stories, which whenever they are given a platform to show off what their skills are, they never want to leave what is unspoken about, right? And I think that's where the African thing comes in, like, we're building African games and whatever. But there's so much more to Africa than your normal stories, and this is what I'm also finding out, right? There's so much more. It is a cliche to a point to say I'm building like African games. Everybody's building African games, and then when they asked us, they're like, okay, what's so innovative about your game? We couldn't answer it. We thought because we are African game, it's innovative, right? It's not, because guess what? Like, three other more studios that came after us were saying the same thing. We're building a taxi game because, you know, it's African and whatever. But there's so much more to Africa. There are scooters that get bumped in the way because they found a thing, you know. There is those guys that are pushing the things, the trolleys, right? Those guys found a gap in the market where obviously the sewage system, not sewage system, the garbage system is obviously failing. They found a way.
Yeah.
And so there's a story there. You could gamify that. I know Space Salad gamified that Dobadash, right? Those are some of the stories you need to start looking differently. You need to, yes, we're African, but so much more is happening in Africa. We've got flippin' crazy taxi drivers. You know, we've got the train system, you know, we've got, there's so many things that you could try and gamify that are still, you know, I guess, easy.
Right.
And there's humor in it. And I think it's something we're talking about it. And you know, a lot of people, their projects get declined because people are just tired of, African, and then what?
Is it that the developers are choosing the difficult parts of African stories to tell through gaming? Mm-hmm. Or is it that the games themselves are not simple enough to play because they are tied around?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that we've got painful, difficult stories to tell. But also a lot of game developers, they miss out a lot on the story part. Mm. Like, what is the story? Okay, great, it's an African game. Okay, but why? Like, why did you pick that?
But that's kind of my point. Like, when you're in the space and you're choosing African story, because Africa's not a country, man. It's like there's loads of different stories, yeah, and cultures and languages, yeah, and everything in Africa. So, like, when you're saying African story, you're almost by default becoming the cliche that is an African story. Like, there's always some witch doctor involved in some way. There's always a spear involved, mm-hmm, or something like that. And it's like, that doesn't need to be there. But
so much more than that.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, but I just find in the conversations I was having is like, I don't know, maybe they're, because they're just chatting to a white dude, they're talking in the sense of like spears and
I think investors are looking for something different, right? Yeah. So immediately, because we know our investors in the gaming industry is, you know, private investors that come into the country, right? So you want to appeal to them by that, like, oh, it's a different. But I've also found that there's so much more into our culture, into our stories. There's so much more untold stories. I mean,
right.
I recently found out where I come from. There's literally dinosaur footprints just like 10 minutes away from where we live, right? Was like, it's in Engcele in Eastern Cape. It's a small village, right? It's just underneath the Drakensberg Mountains. I was like, you're trying to tell me I grew up here the whole time and none of you people chose to tell us this in primary school, that there were dinosaurs here once upon a time? Like, and I told my grandma, like, I want to go see it.
Yeah.
And there's sand gravings on the stones. And I thought, I never knew this.
Yeah.
And then when I take a look at what they did with sand gravings in Cape Town with VR, it was amazing. They preserved that. Mm. And that's when, you know, it comes back to saying there's so much more that's being untold. We are also stuck on the narrative of African stories that are painful. But I guess it's because that's our reality. We wake up, there's something bad that has happened, you know, to an African child or whatever the case is. But sometimes with games, it's games. Mm. They're supposed to be fun. There's impactful games, like we are building a menstrual cycle game. That's an impactful game, right? But then there's games where people just want to have fun. And they want to experience the African culture, the fun side of it.
Mm.
And there is. It's not that we aren't fun people. We are very fun people.
Wait, you said you're building a menstrual game?
Yes.
What is it?
It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle. So our game was meant to highlight period poverty and what we found.
What?
Period poverty. So period poverty is when young girls or women don't have pads and they miss school and they do this and that and that and that. And then in the research, it was just mostly for South African research. But then as we kept like learning, we found that it's actually all over the world.
Oh.
And that, like, in countries that have war, women have to choose between sanitary pads and food. And that, like, the people that are actually driving the multi-billion-dollar business is men. So one day a man will wake up and like, today we're gonna raise the price of menstrual pads. And then there's some girls that can't afford that. And it's such a bad cycle because some girls end up sleeping with older men just so to have money to go buy pads. And then in the process, they get infected with STDs and HIV. And it's not even a lot of money just to buy pads. So it's quite a bad cycle. But our game was mostly to just educate everyone.
Okay, not just women.
Yeah, it's not just women. It's to educate everyone. If you don't know what period poverty is, what women go through that month, and also the lies in the adverts. Like, we're not happy during that month. We don't want to jump.
Have a happy period.
No, we're not. but that's the thing. So how do you gamify, you know, dinosaur footprints in Eastern Cape?
Right.
How do you gamify that? How do you take people through that journey? You know, how do I? So it's yes, I think we need to start having that conversation. We need to.
So what are you seeing globally? Global game developers building games to tell stories about their cultures, or are they just building games for people to play? And globally, if that's the case, why are we trying to tell our stories through games to try? Are we competing with the global market by trying to tell African stories through games? Or can those stories serve a different purpose?
Both. There's a way you can tell an African story and not make it boring and not make it sad and stuff. Right? Globally, people are developing games for people to play.
That's it.
There's places in Asia where they've got a cafe for people to come and play. Mm. You just come and play games because it's fun. Right? We need to understand, I think one thing I'm also learning is, as a South African, I'm not going to say African, we have so much pain going on in South Africa. There's just too many things for us not to want to talk about what's going on. That's why I'm saying a lot of people and a lot of young Black people, when they're given the opportunity to speak and they've got that platform and privilege, they are going to use it. It's just so hard that we learn a little bit later that sometimes that's not the way to go about things, to still tell your story. You can still make a really good game and the story speaks to the pain there. But the game itself is different from, you know, the story. It aligns, it kind of, there's a link there, a silver thread. But still, I could make a really fun game about menstrual cycle that you wouldn't even think it's about menstrual. You would just think it's just red hearts that you're picking up. But they actually represent something. And you would only find that out in the story of the game, right? So, yes, you could. It's a bit of both. You could still use it to your advantage, but it can still kill your game.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned Space Out Studios a bit earlier. And I've chatted to Tabo a few times over the years. Mm-hmm. And I've never put him in the category of like a Games for Change type, you know, broad category. Mm-hmm. But he corrected me on that. He said he actually does consider himself in that sort of space. Mm-hmm. And just given the games that he's developed, it makes sense. He's got a very, very, very strong social angle on a lot of the games he makes. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, to your point, it doesn't necessarily come out in the game.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting to hear from him, like, oh, no, this is actually the background. Like, you got so stuck up on that twerking game. Like, you just you just didn't stop with it. I was like, dude,
it's quite nice.
Can we move on from the conversation? But
I know, they got it right. Yeah, one thing about Space Salad, I speak to Tabo a lot. Sometimes I bother him. I'm like, Tabo. And he's like, okay, what is it? I'm like, and then the game. And then he's like, no, fam, you got to, you know. Really, really managed to find a way to build a game, and then only later on you're like, oh, this is a twerking game. What's the twerking? It's like, oh, it's actually an African tradition. And like, what, really? Like, oh, we didn't know that. Yeah. Like, oh, you
connected. I found that fascinating. Yeah. And I was like, wait, what's
so they've hit the mark. They've got the global viewpoint, but keeping it here pretty well. They've kind of kept it.
But I think because we are growing, remember, guys, that the gaming scene in Africa is fairly new. Right. And it's only now that we are now pushing for even more young Black game developers to go into the space. The gaming industry was mostly, as I know it, the successful game studios were in Cape Town, male dominated, white dominated. And even in Joburg, there's only a few game studios that are actually successful, white dominated. Right. Mm. So now as Black people, we're coming in and we're like, I've actually always loved doing games. Now I can actually start doing these games. And then we have this narrative that we also want to drive out as Black young African game developers. But there's many ways that you can do it. And I think Space Salad is such a great example of which direction we can take. And I think my biggest thing with gaming, marketing.
Oh.
No one does it.
Yes.
No one does it.
That's the problem with...
Yeah, I think that's if I'm ever going to branch out of game development, that's where I would want to be.
Game marketing.
Yes.
Wait, nobody... What's Goofy?
It's expensive. No one here really does it.
Yeah, there's no... And let me tell you, it's not that Africans don't play games. Oh, we'll play games.
Everybody has a game on their phone.
Right.
Yeah.
But what type of games are we building for Africans? Do you get me? You're going to build Super Mario. How many Africans have played Super Mario?
Quite a few, I'd say.
Quite a lot.
Maybe not. It's a trick question.
Okay, maybe not Super Mario, but hear me out. At the time when my brother got the little PlayStation, that the old one,
with the cassette.
Yeah. It was because his mom was doing well at APSA, right? And that she was working well. And I had just come from a village. I didn't even know how to speak English at the time, right? But then that's the first game I played.
I think that's the
when
first
I talk about a market, I'm talking about people that actually in Eastern Cape that actually play games, that I've seen they play games. But if I'm going to design a Aragami, for instance, is a game that I'm currently playing on Xbox, right? And I'm saying I'm designing it for the African market. Which market is that?
Exactly.
If you are saying Africa is got billions of people, most of the people use smartphones. Mm. So there is a market of people that you can build games for.
Right.
But are you building for them? Does it speak to them? Mm. Right? You get me? I'm going with this. So
okay.
I think if you are targeting the global market, sure. Go ahead. The marketing strategies that exist will work for you, definitely. I'm not saying they don't. We can take best practices from the marketing in the gaming side of things to South Africa or Africa as a whole. But like, if we had our additional marketing strategy that speak to us and the type of people that we're developing games for, we're sucking into the pie of billions of people that are willing to actually watch that ad because they are going to pay for a game that speaks to them as gamers or game players.
Okay, so you're considering that like an ad based. I was gonna ask you a question about platform. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, like Steam or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has globally, we all kind of have to access games via the same platform. Mm-hmm. It's kind of where my point earlier when I was saying you are competing globally because of the platforms.
Yes.
Where you can download games. So, yeah, I suppose you're right in the terms of the marketing of that. You wouldn't be. Yeah, you'd market an ad so someone click on that and go directly to where they can download it from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we have to be realistic, guys, that we're starting out. And that means building. And it means borrowing best practices from what already exists. I'm not saying we shouldn't use Steam. We shouldn't use HIO. We shouldn't use this. But like, let's also build towards the things that are going to be visible to the people that we're building for. I'm not saying that... You know, don't build games for that side of the market. Do. It's great. I would also love to tap into that market with the type of games that we build. But bring it home sometimes because that's where you're through. You know, those people will push you. And sometimes on Steam, you just need 1,000 people to redirect you that if you're doing a great game or bad game or whatever, Wouldn't it be great if it were your own people directing the same African game that you are building and they directing you and they're like, ah, maybe don't add the taxi driver. Maybe add the snake if you want to. Or maybe, you know, add the church if you want. Imagine if you made a game about a church, the church goers and stuff. We always talk about it on TikTok. People laugh about it. And there's humor in there because of what we see. That's relatable. That's relatable, right? Yeah. And there's so many, many ways you can do it. But I think if we are headed the right direction... And I hopefully if the government is listening, you can pump in money in the creative industry. You can pump in money in the creative industry. We would start having those budgets for marketing.
Right.
Yeah.
And how hard is it to sustain a gaming studio in South Africa, would you say? And are you relying on funding? Are you relying on investments?
You could probably count them on like one hand.
Yeah, you can. You can. It's hard. It's really hard. And I keep always telling the other game developers that came after me, collaborate.
Okay.
Rather, like, for instance, the animation industry, right?
Yeah.
They collaborate as studios. You find out Super Team 4 came out, it was multiple different studios that came together, others from Zambia, others from Zimbabwe, others were what? Yes, the biggest game studio that got the contract, whatever, is, you know, get the funding,
right,
is the thing. But everybody gets a portfolio from that. It doesn't mean we are swallowing your studio, we should make one company or anything. Mm-hmm. It just means we need your skills. Right. Let's all collaborate. So it could be a talk that, no, I want to collaborate as a studio, or uh-huh, I want to come in as an individual. And then when we branch out, then it's like, when it makes it big, it's like, oh, guess what? South Game Studio was in that project. Mm-hmm. Space Salad was in that project. Pineapple and Pizza was in that project. Like, everybody was. And then now you've got a stronger portfolio as a game studio. Mm-hmm. It's one of the ways in which we can start sustaining ourselves and growing, that we can see, I'll use Tabo because we speak, right, to them a lot. Space Salad is doing great. How can we collaborate? Guys, we're looking for collaborators. South Game Studio, we know you've got three programmers in your thing. Can you come on board? And then once the game makes it, the revenue is cut fairly and whatever, everybody is set for a couple of months, whether that is taking it back to your studio for a prototype. For instance, now we are looking for extra money to finish the prototype. So it's a collaboration. Now we are co-producing. Now we are doing 1, 2, 3, and 4 now. So
collaboration is key.
Very, very important. Yeah, I mean,
we made that point. So not just collaboration within game developers. So Tabo's kind of made that space quite well in the sense that, you know, he's looking in the entertainment industry in order to collaborate with making games. So he's got the Brandy and Tropica, things like that. He's getting those, that cross-referencing going, which in turn will snowball into an actual business, which is what he's creating now.
So I think also another thing, exactly that, because we might not have found the market yet for our games.
Yeah.
Go the commercial way. Right. Work with brands. South Game Studio, we're branching out into like tourism, tourism, mining, the mining sector. These guys want to gamify the safety around the mine. And they were like, okay, cool. So there's so many ways in which, it's just that if you're going to go out and pitch, you better be ready. You need to have the answers. Your pitch needs to speak to what it is that you're trying to, you know, get out. But people are always willing to listen. That's also another thing.
Right.
People are always willing to listen because there's many ways in which we can make game development or gamification work for us while we still try to find ways to, I guess, keep our studios afloat.
This is interesting. It also came up with our conversation with Tom.
Get your paperwork.
Right. As a studio, you have to sort of branch into services and products. Develop your games, yes.
Yeah.
But find clients that you can gamify products for and then for the sustainability of your product.
Mm-hmm.
Who funds gaming in this country? Is it government or private? I'm just saying,
mostly private, but I will say for the first time we do have the government. So Jobs Fund came in and they funded what we call now the African Game Consortium, which was a consortium of 3-5 different companies, including Tsimulukong. So you would say it's very nice to, because I think that was a way of saying, okay, we're here, we're listening. What do you have, you know, in store for us? And I think that's the first and many ways in which the government is now listening. What we had found over the years was we were not speaking the same language with the government and they didn't understand. So why should I put a budget for something that is not even like sure success, you know? But now what has happened is, okay, you guys have been knocking. And we also had to go back and be like, you know what? We're not speaking the same language. Maybe we need to readjust and realign how we are speaking to these people. So let's try. And then the minute they did, and the minute we all did, Jobs Fund came onto the table and they're like, okay, great. And Raymond was able to be like, okay, great. Let me get a consortium, which is a collaboration, right? Because he realized that, okay, I can't just be Raymond saying I got the funding.
Right.
I need other people in the sector that are playing to come in. And yeah, I think slowly
Yeah.
But the government is coming in.
Yeah, okay. Raymond's his name. I was while you were speaking, I was like, ah, what's this dude's name? Lidwaba. That's
yes,
his surname?
Raymond Lidwaba. Oh, and his book.
And
his book.
And his IT think sort of broader space. I know Kumo, who works there as a dev a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of an interesting thing. That only happened the end of last year or so, eh? October-ish, Jobs Fund came on board.
I'm not sure about the dates.
But yeah, it's relatively recent developments.
Yeah. Have you read Raymond's book?
No, I haven't. I do want to get them on the show as well, just to talk about that process and how they approached it.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's read the book before we get it.
Let's read the book beforehand. It's quite new. It's quite new. He just launched it like a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. So, all right, cool.
So, that's the gaming industry as a whole.
I've got loads of other things to chat about, but I think we're out of time, man. It's about 12-ish, yeah.
So. Okay.
Whatever. We'll talk again because it's like an industry that I like getting plugged into quite a lot. So.
Is it?
Yeah. What can we look out for from Southside Studio?
South Game Studio, it's the menstrual cycle prototype. So we are hoping to launch the prototype at the end of March.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Wait, the African game is parked for good?
We need people. We need people. Skill. Yeah.
Oh,
collaboration. Yeah, we need collaborations. We need money.
Okay.
And the reality is that because you can't like run a game studio, I'll speak as a woman full time because it needs time. I need to have money for sanitary pads at the end of the month. So I need to have a job. I need to have a job. We need to sustain ourselves, you know. So it becomes very difficult to continue running a studio. Yeah. So everyone else in my team is working. So when we have time, we always go back and revisit. Okay. But it's a huge game. It's a 3D open world game, PC game. So we are trying to tone it down a little bit so that we can, hopefully. That is the game that we actually want to take out and collaborate with Tourism South Africa because it speaks to tourism in South Africa. So, But for now, TOA, the menstrual cycle game, we are taking the prototype in March, end of March, April. So, look out for that.
South Game Studios. Nice. Any advice for an upcoming game developer? If I'm considering getting into the game dev scene, brand new, fresh from college or whatever, and I'm like, okay, I've got ideas for games.
Yeah.
What do I need to know?
Just do it. Yeah.
That's it. Just get in.
No, honestly, just do it. I never went to varsity.
Yeah.
Right? So I never studied for any of the things that I'm doing now, especially when it comes to coding.
Yeah.
So I'm self-taught everything.
Right.
So build your portfolio, have something to show of it so that people can take you seriously. And then just do it. Just ask the questions, follow the pages that you need to follow to keep up to date. Don't be afraid to, inbox people on LinkedIn. Don't be afraid to ask for help. That's how I got my first laptop. It was donated to me because I asked for help. Do not be afraid. It doesn't mean you are weak or anything.
Yeah.
Just ask for help. People are always willing to help more than you actually think. And and just go into the industry and you're going to find amazing people. People are always willing to assist.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
Any parting shots?
Nope, not just yet.
Not just
great.
Yet.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. That was great.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right. Thank you for coming in and thanks for tuning in to our viewers. We'll leave all the information in the descriptions below, ways you can contact Abu and South Game Studios. As usual, we'll see you next time. Adios.
Bye.